Today we have an unusual panel discussion. Normally our services are a study on a biblical topic where we're looking at scriptures. And we hope that scriptures will be brought into the discussion as scriptural principles relate to what happened in history. Today we want to discuss early Bible student history, particularly during the days of Brother Russell. The American philosopher George Santayana said, "Those who cannot remember the past are condemned to repeat it." Brethren, we and our children need to understand what happened in the past so that we don't repeat the mistakes that some made in the past, and so that we can appreciate the decisions and the sacrifices that led to who and what we are today. Also, brethren, in the year 2010, worldwide interest in the truth and even in the Bible students has been beginning to grow. More non-Bible student groups are actually beginning to defend Brother Russell and even Bible students. We speculate that certain factors that might be bringing this about. One, the fearful problems in the world economy, are causing people to seek answers in the Bible. And many of them are looking at on the internet to search for answers. Two, the explosion of early Watchtower and also Bible student material and documentation on the internet, including the talk radio program Christian Questions, which I believe has a potential audience of 2 million or so, and some anticipate that that will grow into more markets, reaching millions more in 2011. We'll have to wait and see, but efforts are growing in that direction. And third, there's a growing oppressive behavior in the Jehovah's Witnesses organization. They claim 7 million Jehovah's Witnesses worldwide, and maybe closer to 5 or 6. But this growing oppression from the governing body, coupled with the other factors, are causing many Jehovah's Witnesses to secretly seek information on the internet. If a Jehovah's Witness goes on the internet to look for a group like Jehovah's Witnesses so they can find another group that believes in a kingdom on earth but does not believe in hell, trinity, and immortality of the soul, the Bible students are the only game in town. So all these things are drawing interest. We suspect that as part of internal damage control that the governing body has put together this movie on the early history of the Watchtower. It's a history of the Bible students and Brother Russell. Brethren, they are stealing and misrepresenting our history. Today we'd like to set the historical record straight on parts of the movie that we think misrepresent the truth. Now, on a positive note, even though there are parts of the movie that misrepresent the truth, and there are gross omissions of facts that are important, still there are parts of the movie that are very enjoyable to watch, and even uplifting and exciting to see the work of the early Bible students. We hope today's discussion will help us to appreciate better who we are and the sacrifices made by early brethren to preserve the original Bible student movement. And with that, we're not going to be able to play the whole movie. It's an hour long, but we'll play clips and talk about them. We're going to focus on problem clips, clips where there are problems with. And if you want, you can see it in its entirety on your computer at home, and we can provide you with the link for that. As the parts of the movie you do see, look and see if you notice any brethren that you recognize the pictures of. of any brethren in particular, and that will be interesting. So now we're going to play the introduction to this movie.
For more than 100 years, Jehovah's Witnesses have proclaimed the Bible's message that God's kingdom will rid the world of wickedness, restore the earth to paradise, and raise mankind to perfection. Sharing this truth, however, has often resulted in persecution from powerful institutions. But why has such a positive message elicited such a negative reaction? And how have we overcome that opposition to get to where we are today? This is the story of a people intent on living in the light of Bible truth, no matter what hostility they may face. As you watch, note the determination of Jehovah's modern-day servants to study diligently, preach zealously, and keep serving God faithfully. This video is more than just history. This is your story. It's a reminder that Jehovah God is in full control and that this is His organization. It is a story that begins over 6,000 years ago, the story of Jehovah's Witnesses.
What did you think of the introduction? Did you agree with it?
Well, there was one phrase in that introduction by Samuel Hurd that caught my eyes and ears, and probably yours too, when he said that this organization, and he's talking about the Watchtower Bible and Tracts Society, the Jehovah's Witnesses, is His organization, meaning it's God's organization. You might even recall the word "His" was in italics in the words below the screen in the subtitles. And that particular claim that our church organization is God's organization, of course, is a very powerful statement, because it implies that if you're not in our organization, then you're not in God's organization and you're not in harmony with Him. And part of the reason that my ears really perked up when I heard that phrase was just three nights ago at the Thursday evening study held at Sister Tilly Jesuit's home, we began studying the chapter in the sixth volume, The Organization of the New Creation. And in that chapter, Brother Russell spends a good bit of time describing both the true organization of the new creation and the false or counterfeit organization. I'd like to read just one short paragraph, and then I think this will really perk up your ears too as you continue to listen to the other parts of the clip. This is from Volume 6, page 198. First, Brother Russell talks about the true organization of the new creation, and now he begins to contrast it with the false or counterfeit organization. He says, all this is different in human organizations in proportion as they have ignored or abandoned the simplicity of the divine arrangement. They have made arbitrary rules respecting who may be acknowledged as members or branches of the vine, and who may or may not be admitted to the full fellowship. They have made financial exactions and various rules and regulations which the Scriptures have not made, and laid down numerous creeds and confessions which the Scriptures have not laid down, and have prescribed penalties for violations of these which the Scriptures have not imposed, and have made regulations for, listen to this word, disfellowshipping, excommunicating, and so forth, contrary to any authorization given to the true church, the body of Christ, the true vine, the new creation. Now realize, Brother Russell wrote this in 1906, 15 or 20 years before the Jehovah's Witness organization was even formed. And yet, in this part of the sixth volume on the true organization of the new creation, I think Brother Russell is almost a prophet foretelling what would become, regrettably, of the organization he had started. We'll hear more.
Brother Dan.
One of the things that, you know, I noticed also along with Brother Joe, the same thing, that as you watch this whole presentation, what is stressed is the organization rather than individuals within the organization. And what they're looking for is the seventh messenger to the church. And they're not saying it's Brother Russell. They're saying it's the organization is the seventh messenger. And so as you watch this, you'll be able to pick that up. That was one of the first things as I viewed this whole presentation was, this stressing of not individuals, but the organization. And even when they have clips of Brother Russell, they have him saying, the IBSA is doing this and the IBSA is doing that. It's all stressing the organization rather than the individual, and which is contrary to what we believe is what the scriptures teach about the seven messengers to the church.
Thank you. The IBSA being the International Bible Students Association. First, Brother Russ, and then Brother Ted.
Just to add to what has been said, I think one of the key points we should recognize in this, and even in explaining this to others, is that for over 1,500 years, various factions in Christendom have always claimed to be God's organization: the Catholic Church, the Orthodox Church, even most Protestant organizations try to represent their particular denomination as God's organization. And of course, the answer is none of them are God's organizations. God's way of organizing the church is in local ecclesias, and that is the extent of it. So I think we can always see that in that respect, the JWs fall to the same kind of argument that we would use for addressing the organizations of Christendom.
Thank you. Brother Ted.
When you watch the rest of this film, notice how they use the term Jehovah's Witnesses. They use it in two ways. They use it as referring to their present organization, but they also use it in a very generic way, as he did in the beginning, in this first paragraph that he read to us. He started out by saying, for more than 100 years, Jehovah's Witnesses, indicating that he's applying it there to the work that Brother Russell started. But at the end, the story begins over 6,000 years ago, the story of Jehovah's Witnesses, referring there to any of God's servants whose activities are recorded in the Scripture. So they use the term Jehovah's Witnesses in more than one way. And so you have to be careful in the context to see how they're using it.
Yes, Brother Irwin.
The last 2 years, we've been very friendly with two elders from the Jehovah's Witnesses. One elder is Jewish. I never heard of a Jewish Jehovah's Witness elder. The other one is Oriental, and we know the whole family. They've been at our house several times. In the opening statement, I know it's only an opening statement, but when they say restore mankind back to paradise, it's their interpretation of restoring mankind to perfection. I'd like to state as a fact from one of the elders that all the individuals who did not listen to Noah when he was a preacher of righteousness, they are not coming back. They will not be offered salvation. All those that they talk to at the present time, if they are rejected, the Jehovah's Witness message, they are not coming back. So when the opening statement said to restore mankind back to perfection, it's their interpretation of eliminating individuals from the opportunity of having salvation. We know the scriptures say all in Adam, so that includes everyone. So they are making an exception, and that opening statement is not accurate, although it is an opening, like a general statement.
Okay, thank you. Brother George.
I thought it would be well to just mention up front that, you know, there are going to be a number of negative comments made about the organization of Jehovah's Witnesses. But I think we want to recognize that this does not mean that there aren't some devoted and consecrated people within that organization. We're talking primarily about the organization and its principles. We realize that of all the religions in the world, they are closest to the truth. As we know, many errors are still there, but many have come out of that system into the truth movement. And so we should think of it not as individuals in any way, because there are devoted people there, but it's the organization that we're primarily concerned with.
Thank you. Brother Russ?
Sorry to talk again, but I just wanted to tack on to what George was saying. And we also remember we have to consider the perspective of the world. When it comes to the world, they don't view us, the world will not view us any differently than the JWs, because the doctrines that the world cares about, Christendom cares about, eternal soul, immortal soul, eternal torment, Trinity, we see the JWs see the same as we do. So for all practical purposes, as far as they're concerned, there's no significant difference between our view of doctrine and the JW view of doctrine. So, again, emphasizing that they are closer to the truth than probably any other organization.
Okay, thank you. The Jehovah's Witness organization, we can actually say historically, it formed somewhere around 1931, because between the death of Brother Russell and that time, approximately 1931 or so, the majority of the original Bible student movement left and either didn't do anything or formed into other groups, like the Layman's Home Missionary and other groups that developed at that time, including eventually the Herald and the Don Bible Students. Okay, so let's go to the next clip.
In 1876, Russell had written an article in Bible Examiner entitled "Gentile Times, When Do They End?" in which he stated that the seven times will end in 1914. Russell concluded, on the basis of the tree dream recorded in Daniel chapter 4, that the dynasty that began with King David would be restored 2,520 years after its overthrow. During those years, no Davidic king would rule. The Bible students referred to that period as the Gentile times. What would happen at the end of those years? They reasoned that since Jesus is the only one qualified to assume the throne of David, then Christ himself would begin ruling in 1914. What would that mean for the earth? Reasoning on Daniel chapter 2 and Matthew chapter 24, the Bible students preached that a time of global anarchy would come, which would culminate in the end of the system of things. They believed that around that time, the congregation would be taken to heaven.
They realized that 1914 had a significance. It meant the end of the Gentile times. Now, at that time, they felt that perhaps the work would be finished, and they would go home, as it were. So they were looking forward to a time of reward.
They did understand that there was a significance to the year. Primarily, they thought that 1914 would just be the start of the judgment coming upon the world, or Armageddon.
Yet people in general were anticipating a different sort of future. Many who wrote memoirs about the summer of 1914 described it as one of exceptional tranquility, full of hope and promise. Some analysts felt that in 1914, conditions were better than ever for achieving world peace. What the Bible students had been preaching about global anarchy seemed highly unlikely. But the Bible students counted the days and continued working. Then on June 28, 1914, Austria-Hungary's crown prince and his wife were murdered. His assassin fired the shots that began the bloodiest war mankind had yet experienced. Thank you. notions of tranquility were shattered as nation after nation became enmeshed in the Great War. These and other historical events matched what Jesus said would characterize the conclusion of the system of things.
When World War I broke out in July, they felt vindicated, and it strengthened their faith in the Bible and in Jehovah's prophetic word, but also it enhanced their trust that Jehovah was using Brother Russell and his friends to explain truth to others.
Just looking at the sign of the times that Jesus told us to look at is enough, but it's still significant that they could pinpoint that year. That's phenomenal.
So, based on the portrayal in this movie, did they correctly portray how the Bible students in Brother Russell's day understood 1914? How they understood 1914? And also, did it accurately portray how Bible students viewed 1914? And also, was the Jehovah's Witness understanding of 1914 how we would view it? So what do you say, brethren? Brother Tom?
Well, one glaring omission was the brethren's view on the nation of Israel. They refer to the Daniel text with the cutting down of the tree, showing dominion would be taken away. But when they restore that dominion, they give it to Christ, which we do also, but we also connect it to the restoration of Israel as a dominant force in establishing the earthly kingdom. Since they don't have that view anymore, they eliminated it from our historical perspective. But I think, to be honest, they should have put it in to say, this is what we used to believe, this is what Brother Russell taught. We've shied away from that. So any diversion away from what the original Bible student view was from today, they eliminate the historical reference to it. I don't think that's particularly honest.
Right. You'd never know there was any change of view when you see this movie in its entirety.
And they also don't talk about the Bible students' view of the Lord's return in 1874. They completely eliminate the original thought of when the Lord returned. The implication here is, although I don't think they said it exactly, the implication is that the Lord returned in 1914 and then assumed control.
Right. Brother Russ?
Just a quick one. In a different clip, they do actually state that. As a matter of fact, I believe the quote is, Bible students came to believe that the Lord returned in 1914. Right. It's not in that clip, but it is in the video.
Right, and we should come to I think we'll have time for that clip later. Brother Dean, yeah.
Well, like the brethren have been saying, I think, you know, in the second and third volumes, we have our Lord returning in 1874, coming from in Daniel, the second chapter in the 44th verses, when it's talking about the image of Gentile dominion, and that ended in 1914. We also believe that Gentile dominion ended in 1914, but in Daniel 2:44, when it says, in the days of those kings shall the God of heaven set up a kingdom which shall never be destroyed, and that kingdom will not be left to another people, but it will crush and put an end to all of these kingdoms, but it shall endure forever. And this is, you know, and in the days of these kings is before 1914. And we can, you know, go back to what we believe our Lord returned in 1874, having received the kingdom from Luke 19:15, so that actually the smiting of the image, which they were talking about as what would happen at our Lord's return, actually happens after our Lord returns in 1874. And I think we have enough scriptural proof in the second and third volumes to, without going into a long dissertation on that, to prove those points.
Okay. And we know in Luke 21 that Jerusalem's to be trodden down of the Gentiles until the times of the Gentiles be fulfilled. So there's a direct connection with natural Israel, which is totally missed and ignored here. And then there's Brother Ted, did you have a thought?
Well, not quite along yet.
That's okay. Go ahead.
Friday night there was a webcast on with four of our brethren, Jerry Leslie, David Stein, Jeff Mezrin, Rolando Rodriguez. And one of them said in regard to the JW's teaching about when the Lord returns was that they believed that the Lord's return was in 1874 until the leader of the organization by the name of France said 1914, but that was in the year 1932. So that's when they changed their view as to when the Lord returned.
Yes, Brother Joe.
I'd like to make a comment on something that wasn't shown, but I think it came in between what we first saw and what we've just seen. Chris, would you pass down your script? Brother Chris has actually a copy of the text. And in an earlier part of the video, which we haven't seen, they give the history of the search for truth. It even goes back to Wycliffe and Tyndale and those brethren. And it also talks about George Storrs and others who form some of the background of Brother Russell's learnings. But in the process of this, it says, the narrator says, after 5 years of study, the religious thinking of these men had undergone a remarkable change. Talk about Brother Russell and his counterparts in his day. And then they have an actor portraying Brother Russell who says these words, Christ's return will mean great blessings for obedient mankind. Now that statement by itself is true. But it's only a half-truth, and sometimes a half-truth is worse than a terrible lie. Because what the witnesses teach today, and you'll see this perhaps later in the video, I don't know if Brother Pete will play this part, but they reenact a 1922 discourse that Joseph Rutherford gave at a convention in Cedar Point, Ohio. And it's a stirring speech. They describe it as probably the best discourse he ever gave. And in that discourse, he sort of really rallies the troops and gets them all roused up under a new banner, which actually unfurls from the balcony and says, advertise the kingdom. And so this is an important departure from Brother Russell's message that we should understand that the Jehovah's Witnesses have made. And they sort of imply that it was Brother Russell's belief and understanding. The Jehovah's Witnesses now say that really their mission is to advertise the kingdom. Jesus is present, he's reigning, and if you want great blessings, you must be obedient now. That's the difference. That's where they've lost sight of the two salvations. Mankind are not on probation for their eternal destiny now, but the Jehovah's Witnesses teach that they are. And I think that is the one doctrine that marks us Bible students who have the truth of God's plan different from any other denomination, including the Jehovah's Witnesses, is that we teach the truth of the two salvations. All other churches teach one salvation. Be good now, you go to heaven. Be bad now, you go to hell. The Jehovah's Witnesses teach, join our organization now, you live on a kingdom on earth. Don't join our organization now, you die the second death. It's the same thing. The rewards and the punishments are a little bit different, but it's the same message you hear from every other Christian denomination that doesn't have the truth of the two salvations. And in the video, as I said, they sort of implied that this was Brother Russell's belief. They never mentioned the teaching of the two salvations, and that omission, I think, is particularly heinous.
Brother George.
Recently, well, maybe it was 9-10 months ago, I had a long discussion with a Jehovah's Witness. And what Brother Joe has just mentioned had been the teaching of the Jehovah's Witnesses in the past. At least according to him now, they have changed that. He was very interested in, you know, knowing all about us. I brought out that we were Bible students. We keep to the teachings, original teachings of Brother Russell. And he says, oh, I mean, you know, most Jehovah's Witnesses don't want to talk to you after that. But he did. He wanted to know everything about us, and he wanted to know how do we differ.
And so I started explaining where we differed. And one of the points I mentioned was, well, you believe that if you come to my house and I don't accept your teachings before I die, I will not have a resurrection. And he says, well, you know, that's what we used to believe, but we don't believe that anymore. We've come to realize. Now, this Jehovah's Witness, by the way, attends a Polish Jehovah's Witness congregation. So I'm not sure if it's all of them, but at least in the Polish Jehovah's Witnesses, he said, we've come to the realization that, you know, we come to someone's home and the housewife is a child crying, holding her, and we can't make a judgment that because she hasn't accepted our message that she won't have a resurrection. We believe now that she will. So I thought I should bring that out. That is what they used to teach. Now, maybe others still have that view. I don't know. But at least this one and their congregation changed, which thankfully is far more merciful and correct according to our understanding of scriptures, that all will have an opportunity to be raised.
Brother Irwin.
Along the lines of two salvations, I asked one of the elders that was at our home, do you believe in your organization that you have any running for the prize of the high calling? And he said his recollection would be 11,000, but this year it's down to 6,000. So there are individuals worldwide in the Jehovah's Witness organization that still believe in the high calling.
Okay, thanks. Is there anyone else? Okay, and in that Cedar Point speech, which we may or may not get to, where J.F. Rutherford says, the Lord is reigning, do you believe it? They portray him as teaching that the Lord had returned in 1914, but on the webcast Friday night, Brother Rolando Rodriguez actually had the watchtower from 1922 or 23, and with the complete text of Rutherford's discourse. And if you read the complete text, at that year he was talking about the Lord returning in 1874 and beginning his reign there. Brother Russ.
I don't know if this is really all that important, but I made particular note that when they talked about that, what we just talked about, the speech that Rutherford gave at that convention, they referred to it every time as a speech, not a talk, not a discourse, not a sermon. They called it a speech. Now, I don't know if they intentionally did that, but that, to my mind, reeks of politics and human motivation rather than the Spirit of the Lord. And I just thought it was interesting that even in going over their text and formatting this video as critically as they did, that they would use the word speech in describing that.
Thank you. Let's go on to the next clip.
At Brooklyn Bethel on October 2nd, 1914, Charles Russell made a monumental announcement.
The Gentile times have ended. Their kings have had their day.
Expectations were still running high. Many of the Bible students were hoping for an immediate heavenly reward.
And I might just say, my mother, she was ready to sell up everything in the home, because she thought that the end was coming in 1940. And her feelings were that of a lot of the brothers back there.
Despite such expectations, the distressing world conditions that erupted in 1914 would not mean that the Bible students' job was done. Russell felt sure that a great work remained. He wrote,
We should lose no time dreaming that the door is shut. There are people who are seeking the truth. People who are sitting in darkness. The Watchtower, February 15, 1915.
Yet Russell would not personally reach those people. In 1916, in the course of a preaching tour, he died at the age of 64. He had spent his entire fortune preaching the Bible's message. Whereas the majority of the Bible students kept studying the Bible and sharing its message, others simply could not overcome their disappointments. Disappointment that 1914 did not fulfill all their expectations, compounded by natural grief over Russell's death.
Well, it was a big shock, because they were used to his taking the lead, and they figured he was going to take the lead until the Lord came and took them all to heaven, and they just didn't know what to do for a while. They were totally shocked as to how to carry on.
Some would sever all association with the Bible students and attempt to draw others after them. What would happen to the Bible students? Would they disperse as if followers of Russell?
This is not a work of man. This is a work of Jehovah God. It's evident that Jehovah had already chosen this organization. And because of the faithfulness and the sincerity of the men who were behind it, it's obvious that Jehovah had already chosen this organization to get his work done. There were enough honest-hearted men, hungering for the truth, desirous of doing the will of God, to prevent the organization from collapsing.
Rather than giving in to disappointment over what did not happen in 1914, the Bible students kept their minds open to the significance of what had taken place. The World War and its aftermath had become the world-shaking events proclaimed by Russell almost 40 years earlier. The Bible students were coming to the realization that Christ's presence began in 1914 and that the world's last days were underway. 2 months after...
And then, we'll continue on. Regarding this segment, does anyone have any comments? I have a couple myself, but maybe you'll make them. Brother Joe?
Sorry for always talking so much, but again, you notice that even where they quoted Brother Russell, when he correctly said that the work is not done, the door is not shut, there are many still wanting to come to a knowledge of the truth, the work that Brother Russell was talking about was the harvest work of gathering the elect, the first salvation. Everything you hear in this presentation seems to imply that the work Brother Russell was talking about is the same work that the Jehovah's Witnesses do today, namely advertising the kingdom. And so again, they've lost sight of the two works, really. Brother Russell's entire ministry was about the harvest work, gathering the elect to the heavenly high calling. The work of preaching the kingdom was secondary. It was a good work, and it drew many into the Bible Student Fellowship who were already consecrated and spirit begotten and became part of those running for the prize of the high calling. But none of that is suggested in any of what we're hearing. It's all suggesting that everything Brother Russell did and his work was simply to preach to every single person all over the earth the Bible truth, primarily the message of the kingdom and the Jehovah's Witness organization.
Thank you. Anyone else?
Ted.
Yes, Brother Ted.
They keep emphasizing the fact that God had chosen this organization, and yet we find nothing in Scripture to back that up. In Scripture, we find that God chose a faithful and wise servant, an individual, and it was the work of that individual that constituted the Bible student movement. But the Lord's choice wasn't the organization, it was the individual.
Brother Dan?
Along with what Brother Ted was saying, I noticed that also too, that they were stressing the organization, and I think that's what they stressed through this whole film, is that the organization is the messenger. But I think one of the things that they neglected to, when they were talking about the disappointment of 19. And actually, they were looking at it not as 1914, but really as 1916 when Brother Russell died. That left the vacuum. And Brother Russell, in even as early as 1911, was stressing the point of, there is still a lot of work that has to be done, particularly as what Brother Tom was bringing out, the message about Israel. Israel had not become a nation. Israel had not become, a touchstone in we can see it from our vantage point today. Looking back, we can see in 1948 they did become a nation again. But I think one of the points that the Jehovah's Witness film is missing is the fact of, particularly about the harvest and the two salvations, and what they were looking at is as the flourishing of their hopes. Again, Brother Russell was stressing the fact, in his later years from 1911 on, don't stress so much point on 1914. We see a lot of work that yet has to be accomplished. And, they're looking at it as, well, this happened and it was a total shock. Well, it was a total shock to only those who hadn't been paying attention to what Brother Russell was saying in those latter years.
Okay. Who else had their hand up? Yes, Brother Aaron.
There was a comment made by the narrator, and I'm quoting here. Some would sever all association with the Bible students and attempt to draw others after them. What would happen to the Bible students? Would they disperse as if followers of Russell? And when you look at some of the history, and I'm not really privy to all the things that happened right immediately afterwards. But, you can gain some information from the reprints. There are other articles, and brethren have done research on it and have written about it. But the spirit that Pastor Russell had was lost in the new leadership. And Brother Judge Rutherford assumed control. Now, in the scripts, it makes it sound like, and if it plays further on, it will come across that he was elected, and the history says that no, it really was a usurpation. He canceled or kicked out the board of directors whom he didn't want, and he replaced them with his own. He changed the bylaws so that he would have control. And then as time progressed, he made those who were still following Brother Russell and that spirit of truth so uncomfortable that they left. And this is in the early 1930s. And once they left, the majority of the association that was left were pro-Judge Rutherford, so he took the organization in a completely different line. And that's when my own family left around that time. My grandparents, et cetera, left. They just could not tolerate what was going on. And the saddening thing about watching this whole video is there's a pro and a con. The pro is, and speaking on behalf of the video, that nobody can tell all of their history in 1 hour. It doesn't matter who attempts it, you can't tell all of it. So we can't beat them up too much because they have missed or omitted certain things. I mean, it's just the way it's going to be. But the thing that really struck me was that Brother Russell was all along saying, leave the churches, leave the systems, look for the truth. And you find it in the studies of the Scriptures. Not the volumes, per se, but you find it in your study of the Scriptures. And then Brother Russell, based on his study of the scriptures, wrote the different volumes. And we've used them for a help and a guide. But what happened is that they left that, and now instead of having that autonomy and independence of being a Bible student, they came back into under an organization and submitted themselves to it. And if the organization is good, then the members do well. But if the organization is bad, the members don't do so well. And that's what we've seen throughout history. The early church, the rise of the church systems was because of the usurpation of the authority and the fallenness of the leaders. And it became more important for them for the success of the organization than it was to honor the Lord. And I think we see the same thing with that happening there. There's a lot of things in this video that are unsettling, and there are some things, that, as you mentioned in your opening comments, that are it's really quite amazing. But I think we shouldn't look only at all the negatives and beat them up too much because they left out some things. Again, because nobody can tell their history in 1 hour and tell every aspect of it.
Okay, let's move on to the next clip.
Joseph Rutherford was appointed to oversee the work. Rutherford had been a close associate of Russell, traveling with him and speaking in his defense. Like Russell, he believed that the good news had to be preached. He was dynamic and could not be intimidated. Yet not everyone appreciated these traits, even among the Bible students.
Brother Rutherford, he was an entirely different personality, brusque in manner, and he didn't fear to tread on anyone's toes. I think this had a tremendous test on the brothers, because they were really worshiping the creature more than the creator.
Rutherford directed that Russell's notes for a seventh volume of Studies in the Scriptures be compiled into a new book called The Finished Mystery.
On the day that the book was...
It mentioned 2 months after Russell's death, Joseph Rutherford was appointed to oversee the work. Brother Aaron already began commenting about this, but would anyone like to comment about exactly what happened? Because, Brother George.
I'll just read a short portion from the book Messenger of Millennial Hope. In rapid succession, this would-be leader allegedly proceeded to declare Pastor Russell's will technically invalid. He arranged to have himself elected as the new president of the society, prepared bylaws for adoption by the shareholders in which he declared himself as president, the exclusive manager of the Watchtower Society, appointed an advisory committee of 3 not previously provided for, which in effect bypassed the authority of the 7-member board of directors, a majority of which had become oppositional to him. Well, I think that's sufficient to bring the point. Brother Russell had a will, and that will stipulated that at his death there would be 7-member board that would oversee the Watchtower work. Well, what happened is what I read. He declared that will invalid. He was a lawyer. He knew, etc., and usurped authority to put himself as president.
Joe.
Building on Brother George's comment about Brother Russell's will, it's in the reprints, and there's an interesting feature to the reprinting of Brother Russell's will in the reprints. It's in, I think, the December 1916 issue. If you'll have it, you'll find that it's the issue that has the large picture of Brother Russell's casket and the flowers and the gone home sign that you saw in this video. And in the will, It spells out, as Brother George just said, that Brother Russell said in his will that there would be this management committee of 7, and he named the 7. And then there's another short paragraph below that that says, if any of those 7 cannot serve or cease to serve, these five shall be their replacements. They would be taken by the seven one at a time as needed. And so, again, it says, you know, if any of the seven cannot serve or end their service, their substitutes will be taken from these five. Read the names. Count the number of names. There are six names. One of them is Joseph Rutherford's name. And so while we don't know, the speculation is that Joseph Rutherford was not one of the replacements named by Brother Russell, as might be needed, but that he had his name added to the list of the five that Brother Russell had specified, but forgot to read up a paragraph and change the word five to six. And so it's a glaring inconsistency that I think also supports the thought that Brother Rutherford finagled and wangled his way into Brother Russell's will, and when that wasn't fast enough for him to take over the society, he had the will declared invalid.
Brother Aaron, and then Brother Ross.
Yeah, I have a copy of Brother Ken Rawson's booklet, which is called, named, Pastor Russell Founded the Bible Students, Not Jehovah's Witnesses. And in his opening page, he has a sentence or two, and I'll just quote it. It says, after the death of Pastor Russell in 1916, the purpose of the Watchtower Bible and Tract Society changed drastically. Joseph Rutherford, whom Pastor Russell had recently dismissed from his staff, seized legal control of the Watchtower, dismissed the majority of the board of directors, and established dictatorial authority. And that's from Brother Ken's book.
Thank you. Brother Russ?
I think in the conference call that was held this summer during the general convention, Brother Jim Parkinson reiterated that Brother Rutherford, prior to Brother Russell's death, had been sent out to the West Coast because his personal habits were not becoming to the truth. And that was kind of a way to get him away from the management. But when he heard that Brother Russell died, he immediately rushed back to the East Coast where the power was and initiated some of these procedures to try and get himself back in the organization. This video tends to make you think that Rutherford was an integral part of the organization as it was running, and then when Brother Russell died, it was just natural that he would slide into this leadership role. When really, I think the facts and the witness of the brother and that still survived that time and were related to the experience said that really wasn't the case. He was more or less pushed to the fringes of the organization really before Brother Russell's death.
Okay, thank you. Brother Chris.
Yes, I as I was watching this video, I had similar thoughts to what many brethren already expressed, and also in somewhat of a defense of the effort, as similar to what Brother Aaron said, that there's really certain compromises that you have to make to really represent a large volume of material. But I think what matters is often the fairness with which you represent the information, and whether or not you use any sort of manipulation or misrepresentation that you would utilize to express the content that you're presenting. I do find that based on what facts are already known, without too much research, that there is points like this in the script or in the video that are characterized by these unfair ways of representing what really occurred. But even if we were not to stick to the facts, but rather look at some of the sentiments or principles that are being shown here, I just wanted to point out this sentence that was played. Brother Rutherford was an entirely different personality, brusque in manner, and he didn't fear to tread on anyone's toes. I think this was a tremendous test on the brothers because they were really worshiping the creature more than the creator. While it's a little unclear, maybe commenting on the first sentence, and that someone's rough character is a test to the brethren, and glossing over that and saying that this was no problem, he still was okay to be continuing this role of leadership, and then trying to somehow come up with a justification in the second sentence that previously the brothers were, as I think that's what it means, they were worshiping the creature rather than the creator, referring to the respect and esteem that they had held for Brother Russell, of whom we know that he was very much commended for his humble attitude, for his faithfulness to the Christian principles, though the role that he had required for him to be focused and just. Yet in all the different interactions that we hear of, that attitude of humility was being shown. So we want to be careful that at this very critical point, where it was truly a shock to the whole body of the Bible students, that a leader, a shepherd that they had held in high esteem, let's not even go into the question of whether worshiping him or not, because it would have been very incorrect if they did. But nevertheless, just like with any leader, when the shepherd is struck, the flock is dispersed, and that really is what happened, and rightly was the expected reaction to this. Yet, as we heard in the other quotes, what will happen to the organization was the question. Will the organization, which represented power and influence, survive, was the concern, rather than what will happen to the truth and what will happen to the people, the individuals that were involved. So we want to be careful that when we hear these statements, we see where the heart of the matter is and whether it's in lines with the Christian spirit.
Okay, thank you. Just one more comment, and then we're going to sing a hymn to take a break for the recording people, because they need to make a transition. But go ahead, Brother Dan.
Well, I was just, you know, along the same lines as Brother Chris and the other brethren have been saying, there was a change in the attitude of the organization. When Brother Russell was in charge, it had one attitude, and now that somebody else took over, the entire attitude of the organization changed with Rutherford. Rutherford was a, quote, brusque, you know, person and wasn't intimidated by anybody. And that what that really translates into is if anybody had a different opinion, he was out. And a lot of brethren found their belongings on Bethel's doorstep when they would go out and they would come back and they would find their I had a real blessing of being in the East Coast for 12 years and was able to meet a lot of these brethren that were still alive back in those days and ones that were associated with them and was able to hear the true stories of what did happen.
Thank you. Yeah, I just wanted to mention, you know, keep one thing in mind, that the Watchtower Bible and Tract Society in the days of the early Bible students was simply a publishing house. But it did have legal issues to be concerned about, and Joseph Rutherford was the top legal attorney, and he knew where all the legal paperwork was. He had put it all together. He knew where the will was. He knew how the corporation was set up and the voting shares worked. He had a legal attorney's mind, and from that standpoint, the brethren were so trusting that when he came in, it was easy for him to swoop in, take over, know where everything was, and for brethren to be trusting of him. I think it might have been in Sister Cora Sunbaum's personal testimony that I heard the recording of, but someone mentioned that they told Brother Rutherford, Joseph Rutherford, you know, it was Brother Russell's wishes that his sister, who was living in Florida at the time, take care of the funeral arrangements. And Joseph Rutherford told Sister Sunbaum or whoever it was, well, we don't have enough funds to cover that. And, you know, the brethren are very trusting. She didn't think there was any deception involved, so she sadly just accepted that and moved on. But he was trying to manipulate and bring everything under his personal control and orchestrate everything himself. We mentioned about the one person quoting serving the creature rather than the creator. So but the point of view they're trying to bring out in this movie is that the organization is God's organization. That's their point of view. And that those who wanted to follow Brother Russell were worshiping the creature rather than the creator. And just because Joseph Rutherford was a rough personality, maybe that's what the organization needed at the time. You need to follow God's organization. So that's the sort of point of view they're bringing out. Rutherford it says that in the movie that Rutherford directed that Russell's notes for the seventh volume of Studies in the Scriptures be compiled into. Did we cover that?
Yeah, it's this clip.
All right, let's go ahead and play that.
Rutherford directed that Russell's notes for a seventh volume of Studies in the Scriptures be compiled into a new book called The Finished Mystery.
On the day that the book was completed and he had a supply in his office, he arranged for the brothers to put one at each table place in the dining room. And so when the family came down to eat, each one had a copy of the book, The Finished Mystery. Some were quite curious about it and wondered what was all about and enthused about it, but there was already a growing tension in the family because some of the responsible brothers sort of resented Brother Rutherford. Some of them had ambitions for themselves, so they used the occasion to bring accusations against Brother Rutherford for having gone ahead and published this without their permission and their knowledge. And the result was eventually about a five-hour tirade against Brother Rutherford, where a number brought a lot of unjust accusations against him.
So, first of all, it says, Rutherford directed Russell's notes to the seventh volume and the Studies in the Scriptures be compiled into a new book, The Finished Mystery. Is that, were those Brother Russell's notes? And then also, it said in the movie, when the seventh volume was completed, a copy was put on the table, place in the dining room. There was already a growing tension in the family because some of the responsible brothers sort of resented Brother Rutherford. Some of them had ambitions for themselves. So they used the occasion to bring accusations against Brother Rutherford for having gone ahead and published this without their permission and their knowledge. The result was eventually about a five-hour tirade against Brother Rutherford. There were a lot of unjust accusations brought against him. So is that the way it really happened that night in the dining room? And were these really Brother Russell's notes that were compiled together into the seventh volume? Anyone have a thought? Brother Aaron?
Well, part of what was said was accurate and part of it wasn't. From what I was able to read and find out, that yes, he did put down the seventh volume on the table. And yes, there was a confrontation. But no, it was not over the seventh volume. The confrontation really was over the way he handled the board of directors and how he dismissed and reappointed his own board of directors. The brethren that referred to as being, that some of the responsible brothers were those who were on this editorial or governing body, and they did not like the way it transpired, the way, you know, the events transpired, so they brought to his attention. And the first comment was about, that they had ambitions for themselves. They were just trying to honor the will and the spirit with which Brother Russell had wanted the organization to move forward as a publishing house. And so Brother Rutherford was, going against that. So he stepped up and said something. And then there's the comment about that Rutherford directed that Russell's notes for a seventh volume of Studies in the Scriptures. From what I was able to read, two different brethren put together the seventh volume, and they had different participation and notes from other brethren, but there really was no notes that Brother Russell had that they used as a transcription in any way. So that's a fairly inaccurate statement regarding his notes.
Okay. Brother Dan?
The two brethren that were involved, I had a conversation with a brother on the East Coast when I was living there, and he said, you know, it was Brother Woodworth, a Brother Woodworth, not the same Woodworth, but I think it was Clayton Woodworth, and Brother Fisher. And he said, if you take all the wood chips out and if you take all the fish hooks out, you've got a fair, decent, compilation of some of what Brother Russell said. And it isn't a matter of he didn't have any, notes per se, written down that he was going to use. This was all conglomeration of that which was already found in the reprints where he commented on a lot of revelation.
Brother Russ.
Just a short comment on kind of the spirit that's running through this that you might have noticed up until this point. I didn't make note of all the occurrences through the videos I watched the first time. Next time I do watch it, I'll notice this. But even in this clip, you notice when they refer to Brother Russell, they just say Russell. When they refer to Judge Rutherford, they say Brother Rutherford. So they're already kind of decoupling their relationship to him, even in the way they refer to him.
Okay. All right. So if the clip would have played on, there would, and as you're watching it, you get the appearance almost that Joseph Rutherford is sitting there like an angel. All he's lacking is a halo over his head. In that, like Indians circling the wagons, these brethren that are jealous and want to seize control and run things themselves are fighting and bickering with them. But as has been suggested, the brethren were arguing with him about the way he had handled the will, and Brother Russell was president of the Watchtower Bible and Tract Society, but he put things in place so that there would be no president to follow him, so that there would be no one person to follow him. And now I'm going by memory here, but I believe there was a group of seven that were supposed to be involved in managing the Watchtower Bible and Tract Society, but there was also a separate five-person editorial committee that was responsible for putting together the articles in the Watchtower Bible and Tract Society. And all that was totally done away with. Okay.
He had two clips, about 10 minutes left. The one on the photodrama and the one on the ransom.
Before we go into another clip, on point number five in the outline, I mentioned we wouldn't play this, but there's a section where Joseph Rutherford and seven associates are arrested and put in jail for sedition based on what's in the seventh volume. Does anyone have any comments about that incident? And if you see this on your own, you'll see it. The FBI or the government or whoever come in and they handcuff Joseph Rutherford and march out about seven of his associates and they end up in jail, and it's all over the seventh volume. Does anyone have any comments on what happened there? Brother Ted?
Well, in the seventh volume, there was a section that was kind of inflammatory toward the public. Talked about the individual, any individuals that opposed the war, those that were conducting the policy of the United States, and it antagonized them and was very critical of them. And so while Judge Rutherford and his associates were in jail, there was evidently a compromise made, and they rewrote those pages of the seventh volume. The seventh volume that I have has the original wording in it, and it's pretty critical of the government, and it evidently was one of the reasons why they were sent to jail.
Right. It was during wartime. It was very critical of the government. It mentioned names, and not in the spirit of which Brother Russell ever wrote. And it was viewed as sedition. But what's interesting is in the movie it says that, well, they realized these charges were unreasonable, and ultimately Brother President Woodrow Wilson released him, released all of them. But if you'll notice what happened after they were released, Rutherford changed the seventh volume, took out the bad parts, and instead of criticizing the government, told brethren they should go out and purchase liberty bonds and support the government because they're there to defend us and our liberties and all that. So what actually appears that to have happened, that there was a quiet agreement behind the tables, and Rutherford and his associates portrayed themselves as willing to go to jail and sacrifice to stand for the principles of righteousness, but in reality, they struck a deal, they came back, and they changed what was in the volume so that they could get out of jail and get back to running things. But what's important here is the Lord may have overruled this for the benefit of the brethren, because while they were in jail, Bible students were trying to figure out what was going on and what they should do. And there was several months where the influence of the Rutherford and those running the organization weren't there. And that's when the layman's home missionary movement started to develop, and some other various groups, the Herald and other groups began to form. And this created the basis for the future independent Bible student movement. Now, when Rutherford came back, he, you know, again seized control and got things moving in his direction. And many brethren, not totally aware of all these details of what was going on, stuck with the Watchtower Bible and Tract Society. But over the years, many of the brethren who did know what was going on published materials and tried to distribute them to the brethren to let them know what was going on. And many brethren figured it out, so much so that calculations are that as much as 75% of the original Bible students, many historians believe as many as 75%, left the Watchtower Bible and Tract Society before 1931 and 32. But in the meantime, the Rutherford used the organization, the Watchtower's financial resources, which was really the remainder of Pastor Russell's wealth, which was still probably substantial, in changing their means of advertising and recruiting new blood and new people. And at the time when the name Jehovah's Witness were adopted, it was to distinguish them from the old Bible students, the old evil slave class that had left, and the new majority that was there, the new majority of Jehovah's Witnesses. Brother Russ.
Sorry to talk so much, but I think one of the key things we should be focused on this incident of sedition and the arrest of the arrest of the head of the Watchtower, is that Contrast that with what they wrote, and I haven't read the seventh volume original, so I don't have access to that, but I'd be interested in following what they were arrested about. But contrast that was happening at the First World War to what happened during the previous administration when this country was involved in two wars. There was actually a book written, published, and promoted advocating how the President of the United States at that time, George Bush, could be assassinated. And that was allowed. I think one thing but things can change in the other direction as well. There's a thing working its way through Congress right now called net neutrality. We know the internet is something that we use a lot for our witness work and to contact the brethren. All your email flows through that. This concept of net neutrality is that, well, what's published on the internet should be balanced, should have an equal representation of liberal viewpoints and conservative viewpoints and religious viewpoints and atheistic viewpoints. But by that, the government gets control because they judge what balance is and what then needs to be censored to maintain that balance. So even though we think that maybe things like this charge of sedition, could never happen again because of what has happened in the recent past, think about what's going on and keep in mind what's going on in Congress and the administrations going forward, that could easily change, and we could see a revisitation of this.
Okay, thank you. Brother George.
This isn't on the aspect of the imprisonment, but I just thought it would be well to bring out, when we're talking about the difference in the organizations that took place, we will be able to appreciate what we have in the liberty in Christ. In the new organization of the Jehovah's Witnesses, all decisions are made by central headquarters. Your elders are appointed by central headquarters. The ecclesia has nothing to say about who will teach them, nothing to say about what they will study. It is all given from central headquarters. The studies, You are given what you are going to study this week, and the answers must be in accordance with what is in that particular awake or watchtower. And the other aspect is character development was greatly minimized. Judge Rutherford, when it was brought up to him that he was, you know, there's so little about character development, he says, well, we are what we are, and we can't change that. So there's very little. It's mostly doctrinal and work. Every single member of the Jehovah's Witnesses are expected to put in so many hours of door-to-door witnessing. And if you don't, you're looked down upon, and I don't know what ultimately will happen. But I think from all of those, we could so much appreciate the liberty we have to select our own elders and deacons, our own studies. And if we differ, we can differ and express it in the ecclesia. You cannot do that in their study meetings.
Thanks, Brother George. And so that's one of the purposes of this lesson, to appreciate where we are, how we got here, and how we're different in that. We are not, the Bible students are not in, quote, organization. What we are an association of new creatures that each person that has a personal relationship with Jesus Christ, and that as new creatures, you have a responsibility to help to make the decisions on who are the spiritual leaders in the group and the sorts of decisions we make in business meetings. And you know what? It would be easy to say, let's eliminate the business meetings. They're not a blessing. Let's replace it with a spiritual study, and we'll just let the elders make the decisions for us. But it would be absolving ourselves of our responsibility And it's sort of the same thing as what's going on in our country. You can make some parallels to what has gone on in our country and the Watchtower. Remember George Washington, who was president, after 4 years, he stepped down and he let someone else be elected. John Adams is the next president. He set the example of how things should be. And today, there are many people that would be happy to give away their liberty and freedom in this country to have the government take care of them and make decisions for them. The government promises they'll take care of your health care. The government promises they'll take care of your security. The government promises they'll, whether you're working or not, they're going to make sure you have money to get by. And they'll take it from evil rich people to do it. But the thing is that the founding fathers of this country, and we think it was partly by God's guidance because it was the right time for there to be a country of freedom and liberty where the truth could develop. The truth could have never developed the way the early truth movement was able to do it in Europe. It would have been stopped. So all this freedom and liberty, and where someone could had the right to pursue happiness, they had the right to work and have a job and work as hard as they can. And so this was the environment around which the truth developed, an environment of freedom and liberty, and something that's taught in the Bible. Okay, so moving along in appreciating what we have, the next clip is actually quite an enjoyable clip. I don't know that we'll have many comments about it. It's about the photodrama of creation. It's about 5 minutes. I think you'll really enjoy this.
By 1914, there were 5,000 Bible students preaching in 68 lands. The world's population was approaching 2 billion. Was there a way to reach more people in less time? New technologies had opened up a possibility.
The photodrama of creation is presented by the IBSA, the International Bible Students Association. Its aim is public instruction along religio-scientific lines and in defense of the Bible as the inspired Word of God.
The Bible students did something that had never been done before. By synchronizing slides and film footage with music and dialogue, they produced an 8-hour audio-visual presentation. The idea was to show the development of God's purpose from the beginning of creation to the millennial reign of Christ. It was shown in 2-hour segments over 4 nights. The first part dealt with each of the creative days. The flood of Noah's day. And the faith of Abraham. Part two showed scenes of God's dealings with ancient Israel. From the Exodus through the reign of the Judean kings. The third segment dealt with the destruction of Solomon's temple and messianic prophecies and their fulfillment. In part four, viewers saw the story of the spread of Christianity, the persecution that resulted, and the huge populations yet to be reached with the kingdom message. Showings were organized so that 80 cities could be served each day. The Bible students themselves paid all expenses needed to rent suitable theaters. The photodrama of creation was a technical feat previously unmatched. It would be another decade before a full-length commercial film would combine music, synchronized dialogue, and color footage. In just 1 year, 9 million people around the earth had seen the photodrama of creation. And many who saw it were convinced that they had discovered the path of increasing light.
Of creation. I'm not sure if there are any comments, but does anyone have any comments about this, Brother Irwin?
I'd like to say that I'm very fortunate to be at the home of Brother Morehouse, Sister Violet is sitting there. We had the Wednesday meeting at the Morehouse home, and if you look in the towers, Brother Copeland, who was on the picture, I tried to yell out what I saw. Brother Copeland served at these films, and his wife Marie served there. And Morehouse and Nody served there. So we went to the Wednesday meeting, and Brother George was there also. They left a wonderful legacy of faithfulness and the enthusiasm that they had, that they were able to serve in a service when Brother Russell was actually living. So they were a wonderful example to us in their later years. So when we went to the meeting, we had the big three, like you had the car industry. It was Copeland, Morehouse, and Wylam. I'm not sure if Wylam served at Bethel or not, but it was a wonderful privilege to be associated with them, and they become the cloud of witnesses like we have in Hebrews, the great cloud of witnesses that attested to their faithfulness and encouraged those coming into the truth.
Thank you. Brother Chris.
Yes, the technology shown was very impressive. It is a thrilling thing to see Brother Russell's face moving and, you know, in motion and expressing these things. And on other places in the internet, not in this video, you will also see additional viewings of Brother Russell in which he says that we are returning to the Bible. We are encouraging Bible study and how inspiring these things were. What I wanted to point out is a few things that even in this short clip seem to just show a different perspective that the JWs have on the things that we and Brother Russell had seen somewhat differently. But I guess in view of their current views, they are slightly differently represented. For example, about the part four of the photodrama, it says, and the huge populations yet to be reached with the kingdom message. Of course, that is very true, that huge populations would need to be reached with the kingdom message. Now, Brother Russell, throughout his ministry, did not deny that many people did not hear yet about the kingdom message, and yet he did not make this a work for the gospel age church to completely accomplish. While it seems that the goal of the modern organization of the JWs is to actually accomplish that, and they put that on themselves as the responsibility to complete before the Armageddon.
The other point was interesting, that the comment that was made about the response of those who were looking at the photodrama. And many who saw it were convinced that they discovered the path of increasing light. And even though this is a scriptural expression, the path of the righteous shineth greater and greater unto the perfect day, it is seemingly quite frequently picked up by the JW organization that the truth increases and in many cases changes. And there are, you know, instances where every decade you see a deviation or a change of some fundamental things that were believed before, and then they are changed to be something different. I think I would have been happy to hear that people who saw it saw that this was the truth. And yet somehow here it says that it was the path of an increasing light. Thank you.
Thank you. Brother Irwin?
A one short comment. The theater was on 8th Street and Wabash in Chicago. That's where they had the photodrama.
Right.
I don't know how many years it was there, but that would be the location.
Right. And on the thought of increasing light, I like the thought Brother Joe once gave me that, you know, if you were in a room and the sun was rising and over an hour time or whatever, the room got lit up but started out pitch black, you might gradually be able to make out a couch. And then as more light came, you'd see the details of the couch and the workmanship until you could clearly see it. At no time would that couch turn into a table. And that's the difference between what we believe. We believe the light, the truth becomes more clear. They believe increasing light means the truth changes. Let's play the last clip, because we're time's moving along here.
Charles Russell never professed to be divinely inspired. He acknowledged the assistance he had received from Jonas Wendell, from George Storrs, and from someone who also brought about one of his greatest tests of faith, Nelson Barber, publisher of the journal Herald of the Morning. On a business trip, Russell received a copy of the Herald. Its contents were a surprise. Like Russell, Barber held that Christ's return would be invisible. Russell arranged a meeting with Barber. Soon, Russell's Bible study group of about 30 merged with Barber's larger group. Russell contributed funds to print Herald of the Morning.
The business is an excellent one.
By this time, Russell began to sell out his business interests in order to preach full time.
Yes, and all that is needed for me. So leave this business behind and start a new life. There you are.
Thank you. And I wish you well on your new endeavors.
He was convinced that the presence of the Lord is of utmost importance.
The presence of Christ is not compared to the flood, but to the days of Noah.
At the age of 25, he went from city to city to speak at various public gatherings, on the streets, and to Protestant churches and their clergy.
He didn't want to form another church. There were already enough denominations in his mind. There he presented these main Bible teachings to them and urged them to study the matter and then to use their pulpits to preach that message. But of course they laughed and made fun of him and went their way. And then that's why Russell decided, well, somebody had to preach these things, so he would use his time and energies to do it.
You would assume that being well off, he could have supported someone else. He could have taken the easy way out and perhaps funded someone else to do the work. He allowed his whole life to center around it. By selling his business and getting involved personally with it, you can see the passion, the love that he had for the truth.
Here's the mail, Mr. Russell.
Thank you.
After 2 years of association with Nelson Barber, A dispute arose that would test the loyalty of each member of the Bible study group. Barber had written an article for the Herald spurning the teaching that Christ's death could provide a ransom for sinners. Though professing to believe in the ransom, Barber wrote that the notion that Christ's death paid for mankind's sins was unscriptural and obnoxious to all our ideas of justice. Russell, his young co-editor, disagreed. Through the pages of the Herald, Russell went to great lengths to defend this Bible truth.
Unpleasant though it be, I feel it necessary to take exception to an article by my brother on this subject. I make the objection not from a spirit of controversy, but because I believe the doctrine assailed in that article to be one of the most important teachings of God's Word. Jesus Christ, by the grace of God, tasted death for every man.
In the Herald, Barber fired back,
"I tell you, such a theology is false, and such justice an abhorrence to the principle of right and wrong."
Dismayed by Barber's refusal to accept this scriptural teaching, Russell asked him privately either to resign or to sell his share of the paper.
"While I still feel that you are a brother in Christ, the points of variance seem to me to be so fundamental and important that full fellowship no longer obtains between you and me. I feel that our relationship should cease."
After months of controversy, Russell's group withdrew from Barber's. Eventually, Russell severed all ties with Herald of the Morning.
Brother Russell realized that he could not restore this man's wavering faith, in fact, lack of faith, and so he took it as the Lord's will that he begin to publish another magazine, Zion's Watchtower and Herald of Christ's Presence. First issue, July 1879.
In the same year that Thomas Edison patented the electric light, Charles Russell had gone from student to publisher. Thus dawned a new era of both literal and spiritual light.
Okay, what are your thoughts, brethren, on that? It was, and the two primary thoughts here are ransom and invisible return. Or maybe you have other thoughts, but what do you think about the conflict between Russell and Barber here and what actually happened? I'll give you my own brief summary. Going back to when Brother Russell was just 17 years old, he wandered into a dingy hall where the speaker, Jonas Wendell, a Second Adventist preacher, was preaching. And Brother Russell's faith was restored because up till this point, he was having doubts and exploring other religions, and he had great problems with hellfire. And from this time on, the next few years, from age 17, maybe the next 5 years or so, he was studying, and Jonas Wendell believed the Lord would return in 1874. But Jonas died in 1873, and Brother Russell was elected as pastor of this small group. And 1874 came, and Brother Russell was trying to figure out what was going on. And along came Barber, who said that the return would be invisible. And this solved the problem. So Brother Russell could look back and say, Jesus did return in 1874, but it was invisible. That's why people couldn't see him. And there was an alliance with Herald of the Morning, and Brother Russell and their groups joined together for a while. But it was never clear Barber ever believed in a ransom, and he started preaching against it. And that Brother Russell made a decision. He had to take a stand.
And even though up to this point, Brother Russell was very open and freely working with others, and he continued to do so, after this experience, there was more of a caution, about protecting the ransom and how important that was. Does anyone have any additional thoughts they'd like to add? Brother Irwin.
This is my opportunity to put in a plug. This is the special issue of the Herald. I think it's one of the greatest pieces of literature that you could imagine. It mentions all of the ones that were in the film. It goes into greater detail. And Brother Russell did acknowledge Barber to thank him, Storrs, Drew, and many others. So I think the Lord, from 1800 on, when the Lord flooded the world with the Bible Society, I think the Lord opened the eyes of many individuals. And Brother Russell benefited from all of those individuals, put it all together, put the chart together for us. And I asked Brother George if any of these copies are available, but it's the special issue of the Herald, and I think it's one of the greatest pieces of literature. And on the back, on the very back page, it shows the history of the whole gospel age, what's been developed, and I hope to review this again. But I have read this several times. It's really a work. It's like a masterpiece. I can't say enough for it. And I don't know if we could get copies for those that would like it or not, but it's fabulous. It goes beyond what you see in this video.
The online PDF is available of that at the Herald website. So if brethren can't get a hard copy, they can view it on their computer or even request it from the Herald, and they'll probably send you one. We could use a roving mic person. And in the meantime, Russ, you have your hand up?
Again, apologize, but I'm glad you chose this clip, Pete, because with all the negative kind of things we said, this was one of the most feel-good clips, part of watching this that I felt. I thought they did a real good job here of representing how Brother Russell came to understand the truth, how it came to be drawn in, and what his early history was. And I really felt really good watching this, even though the argument with Barber over this question of the ransom was somewhat, you know, controversial, at least at that time. But I also found it ironic that as well as this was done, that the Jehovah Witnesses didn't realize that part of their doctrine kind of does deny the ransom because of their exceptions to who is going to be able to take participation in the resurrection, that it really isn't all. Maybe they've changed this recently, but up until this point, they've been denying the benefits of the ransom to those they witness to and turn their backs on the witness. And other groups that they make exceptions for. And I'm surprised that they don't see that, that they didn't see that in their own interpretation when they clearly were making a point how important the ransom doctrine was, that Brother Russell severed his association with somebody highly respected because of that doctrine.
Right. And they don't even believe in the ransom the way Brother Russell did. Brother Joe.
I'd like to just make a closing comment. I don't know if we'll have an opportunity later. Our time is almost up. But I thought this subject that Brother Peter selected was very well chosen for our consideration today, although some might say, well, why did we spend 2 hours discussing a counterfeit system? We're truth brethren. We should discuss the truth. But, you know, the scriptures speak a lot about the counterfeit systems, the beasts, the harlots, and the visions of Daniel and John the Revelator and others. Brother also spent a lot of time talking about the false systems. You recall the chapter in Volume 2 on the Man of Sin, the Volume 6 chapter on the organization of the new creation. And the point of all of that discussion, both in the scriptures and in Brother Russell's writings, and I think here tonight, today, is warnings for us. And so I'd like my closing comment to be four warnings for us. Ask yourself, could this happen to us? In the video, it talked about the disappointment of 1914. I think a lot of the brethren consecrated themselves to a date and not to death. Could that happen to us? Don't consecrate to a date. Consecrate to death. The second warning to us, I think, was along the lines of a comment that was made before about how in justifying Brother Rutherford's takeover of the society, they said, well, those who followed Brother Russell were worshiping Brother Russell. They were worshiping a man. They liked him, his charismatic character, and that's why they were Bible students. When he was gone, they left. Could something like that happen to us? I can think of several among our fellowship today who are rather charismatic in their presentation of the truth. And could we find ourselves following them rather than the message of truth that they proclaim? The third, could it happen to us, deals with the loss of liberty in the organization that became the Jehovah's Witnesses. Again, in that excerpt I read at my first comment from the sixth volume, Brother Russell talks about the hallmark of the true organization of the new creation is liberty, full Christian liberty. The Jehovah's Witnesses lost that. Could that happen to us, either in our own ecclesias or in the Bible students movement in general? And then the last, could it happen to us, as I think goes along the lines of, as has been mentioned, the Jehovah's Witnesses are claiming the name Bible students. So it's incumbent upon us more and more than to differentiate us, ourselves, from the formerly called Jehovah's Witnesses, now called Bible students. How are we different? Well, we know we believe a lot of things different from them, but I think it also behooves us to remember that our work is the work that Brother Russell began, the harvest work of gathering the elect. The Jehovah's Witnesses have lost that vision. Their vision is simply preaching the kingdom. We preach the kingdom too. It's a wonderful message, but don't forget, our work is gathering the elect.
Thank you. Was there anyone out among the brethren who had a question or a comment they'd like to make?
Can you send the link through the secretary so that the whole ecclesia gets this link? And what year was this put on the internet?
This year it's out, and we're told it's being distributed to all Jehovah's Witnesses in the world, all 7 million of them or however many there are. I'll make sure the link gets sent to the brethren so the brethren can view this. I'll also send a link for the webcast where some brethren discussed this Friday night as well. And there's more information on history you could get from a Bible student website. This book was quoted. It's written by Brother Charlie Redeker. It covers a lot of Bible student history and early Watchtower history, and there's other information available. Are there any other questions or comments? Yes, Brother Bob.
Well, regarding the ransom of Jesus Christ, Jehovah's Witnesses believe that the ransom was only for the church, and the rest of the world would be saved through their association of the church. So they don't believe that the ransom occurred for everybody, just for the church, and then the other people would be saved through their association.
Right. So in other words, their thought is when Armageddon comes, whoever survives would only be Jehovah's Witnesses and those, maybe some associated with Jehovah's Witnesses. Everyone else would die forever, and that would be an indication of God's judgment on them. That's my understanding of their view, officially. Although that's not what they'll publicly say, but as you drill down and ask or go deeper or talk to XJWs or look at their material, that's what you find out. Well, we're about out of time. Any closing remarks, Brother Ted?
Brother Peter, I'd just like to mention that there are three items that are available, or one of them is available on the I think it's on the Harvest Truth database. It's called Supplement to Zion's Watchtower and Herald of Christ's Presence. It was issued on July 1st, 1879, and it's to the readers of Herald of the Morning, and it explains Brother Russell's association with Barber. It's not in the. It's not part of the reprints. It was a supplement to them. When Rutherford deposed the brethren that Brother Russell had suggested take over as the editorial committee, those brethren published two works called, or two explanations of what was going on. One was called Facts for Shareholders of the Watchtower Bible and Tract Society, and it was an admonition on to brethren as to how they could vote in coming business meetings. I think the business meeting was in November of 1917. Then there was also another publication that was called Light After Darkness and was a message to the watchers and gave the other side, these brethren's viewpoint, rather, of what happened when Judge Rutherford took over the society. They were both of these two publications were printed, I think, by brethren in the Ohio area. I got a copy of them years ago. I don't know if they're still available or not.
Okay. Thank you. And with that, we're out of time.